Welcome. I'm your host, Andrea Maximo, and you are listening to the Electric Feminine Podcast.
Today, we have a very special guest. Yes, I know every guest is special, but this one is extra, extra special. This is the first time I'm having family on the show. My cousin, Nakia Rosario, will be joining us today to be talking about all things on her journey to the divine feminine, from why she needed to access her divine masculine in order to survive growing up in New York City, and then later on as a single mom, and where she saw it depleting her to the point that she knew she had to make a shift towards nurturing her divine feminine energy, and what that meant. As a Black Latina woman, it can be said that it is often expected that strength and resilience are the main energies you must lead with, or what people expect from you. So there's little space or room for vulnerability. So this episode, I think, is a long time coming, and really important in so many ways for all women in general to hear and understand. But for my Black Latina queens and goddesses that are listening in particular, about the importance of accessing our divine feminine and understanding the balance between these energies within us and how we must access both of them. So Nakia, who is she? She is a magical, around-the-way girl from the Bronx living in North Carolina. Life experiences have developed her into an intuitive, a shapeshifter that utilizes love, good old fresh juices and herbs to encourage, empower, and uplift those around her on every path she walks. Y'all, she is a gem. She's brilliant. She is someone I confide in and trust with my life. I love her dearly, and I cannot wait for you to soak up all of her wisdom, all of her love, and all of those good laughs. Stay tuned. All right. Yes, I believe this is the first time I have family on the show. My cousin, my primana, Nakia Rosario. What's up?
Hey, wait, are we going to be, like, is this the PG version of the family, or is this the...
Nama, we giving them, this is no
PG. We giving it all. Show. I'm ready. I'm here for it, sis.
I didn't call you on the show to give me no PG version. We want the real
deal.
All right,
deal. Good.
The electric feminine, we want straight, no chaser all the time, right? And I think this is what people listening have come to appreciate about the show, is that we don't sugarcoat. Your mouth flies and speaks as it needs to freely. And, you know, we speak directly to the issues. So that's what we're going to talk about, Suze.
I understand the assignment.
Okay, perfect. Awesome. So I brought you on because if y'all don't, you know, you don't know, but obviously you wouldn't know. Nakia is like, you know, in a lot of families, I know cousins are thought of as almost like extended siblings, right? And I was an only child growing up. Nakia was an only child growing up, and she was younger than me. How much younger than me are you?
I think 5 years. This will be my.
It's only five. I don't know why. Yeah. I act like you like 10 years younger than me, but you only like 5 years younger than me. But I felt like you were so much younger than me when we were little, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, you can attest to this, Nakia, like this in our family in particular, like the cousins, both the older ones, like her mother is technically my first cousin, and Nakia is technically my second cousin. These are like my older sisters, you know, and mm-hmm. Nakia to me was like a younger sister. So as we've grown up through the years, we have, you know, we really created this amazing bond, y'all, where we have some of the most in-depth, spiritual, raw, funny as fuck conversations, right? You've really, mm-hmm. you know, I don't know if you know this, Primana, but you really become like a confidant to me. You know, I know you've always talked about looking up to me, but you have to understand how much that you have become one of my inner circle of people that I trust. And it's a very small circle because, you know, I'm Scorpio as fuck. So
I love it.
love everybody, but I got a tight circle. Yes,
but at a distance.
Exactly. Exactly. So anyway, I brought you on today though, because, you know, some of the conversations that we've been having of late really surrounded the topics of you discovering or reconnecting with your divine feminine energy and discovering and really understanding where your divine masculine was, you know, was operating in overuse and where it had actually helped you survive. So I just thought this was such an interesting conversation, and how you tell it and how you speak to it as somebody who, you know, has had her ups and downs in life. You really are, you know, I just think such an amazing person with how you break things down. So I wanted them to hear from your perspectives about the divine feminine, divine masculine, how it's been in your life. Why don't you tell them a little bit about, first of all, where you want to start with this? I'm like, where do we even start?
Which page you want? First, let me just say thank you. And I love you immensely. And everything about my divine feminine journey kind of starts with you. You know what I'm saying?
Don't make me cry.
Well, I had to hold back my tears. I had to hold back mine while you were giving me my flowers. I want to be able to exchange the same token. You know, as I was preparing for this conversation, because I don't usually get to prepare for our conversations. It just flies, you know, we just fly from the heart. But as I was preparing for this conversation, I definitely was in a space where I remembered being little and beaches. Remember Beaches came out and it was Bette Midler and da da da, blah, blah, blah. Yes. And the first thing that comes to mind is The Wind Beneath My Wings. And for me, that was always you. You know, you were my older sister, which is where Primana came from. You were my sister cousin. There's not.
Right. And yes, that's our made up word, y'all. We made that up. Don't go use that in actual Spanish class.
Yeah, don't go looking for it in the dictionary. It's not there. We'll put it there though. We can, because we can manifest whatever we want to. That's how dope we are. But you, like, I watched your growth. I watched how Diti let you be the embodiment of a woman, because that's what she was, right? And so for me, my journey, here's the page that I'll pull. My journey into straying away from the divine feminine was rooted in childhood. So it's one of those childhood traumas that last year when I was doing my shadow work, mm-hmm. I really had to get down and dirty into, because mm-hmm. while we have the technically, how does that generational thing work? Are we the same generation, or you're?
Well, I mean, here's the thing. Okay, well, hold on. Well, first of all, let's backtrack for a second. Just for the listeners again, because if you don't know, if you're not familiar, Titi is a shortened version for Tia, which is aunt in Spanish, right? So our background is Puerto Rican background. Nikki and I are both Black Puerto Rican mix. And so when she's using Tia, she's referring to my mother, Titi, was who she was referring to when she said, Titi, let you be the embodiment of the feminine. That's just so we're clear. I don't have, there'll be cliff notes. There'll be notes. There'll be notes for any of our other isms that we throw out there. Primana means sister and cousin, prima and hermana put together. Okay. But back to what we were speaking to, you were just saying.
When you're caught in the routine of it, it's hard for you to even be able to identify where you got lost. So that's where I was, you know, mm-hmm. in the journey is I had that Miss Independent phase. Remember that? We don't want no scrubs. They can't be on the passenger side in their best friend's ride trying to holler right. at us.
Right.
We I-N-D-E-P-E-N-D-T. I had all of that, right? But then I also had, I also had to have the balance.
Look, you got salsa playing on your, is that your ringtone? Is
a yes, girl, the congo, you better stop playing. The drum is the heartbeat, it's the pulse.
Oh, shit. Okay, I'm sorry.
I was gonna have quinoa playing in the background just to, you know, make sure that we have everybody present for the moment, right? You know how alcohol
is in a heartbeat. Let me ask you something. What was the catalyst? Because you have in our family, my mother, if you're thinking of me as being the embodiment of sensuality, you know, I got that from my mother, right?
From your mother,
my mother, right? I mean, she embodied the goddess like crazy as far as the sensuality, her energy when she danced, right? It was like bananas. The way she dressed, her attitude.
Fearless and fierce.
Very fierce. And what you seeing that and us having that kind of impact on you, what was the shift? What shifted you into this kind of more, and what would you say is the definition of that? Is it more of like a hard stance that you took when you went towards that more masculine energy? What is it?
Oh, it was guarded.
Mm-hmm.
It's so, you know, I had the big head, right? And then I had the more curvy body at a younger age, right? Mm-hmm. And so my image of myself was certainly not what your mother poured into me. My image more so lined up with what my mom poured into me. And it helped tremendously as years passed. It helped tremendously being able to tap back into those memories of watching your mother and Titi Melba, you know, salsa dance. And because sometimes we lose our way. So I became hard because my mother was hard. But again, different environment. She was a girl in the Bronx, you know, she was the middle girl and definitely had middle child syndrome. Like I could go on and on. I at some point in time started becoming a people pleaser. So I started giving away bits and pieces of myself. But the beautiful thing was every weekend, every summer, every whatever, I could go to Titi's house and Titi was put, listen, at 14 years old, I'm in a cat suit and combat boots walking in the village with my big cousin. And you are letting me know that I am all the way the shit. I'm not really sure why you don't know that you beautiful kind of, you know what I'm saying? And I just, I got lost. That's the easiest way to say it. I got lost along the way. I'm giving pieces of myself to other people in ways that I did not even understand I was doing. Mm-hmm. And then I dwelled in toxicity for a good 10 to 15 years and started losing bit by bit my hair, my boobs, those curves, that spunk, that oof, that.
Can you share what the catalyst was? Are you comfortable sharing of just some of the instances that sent you in that way? And I only ask because, you know, I always say that somebody out there is going to hear, oh man, I've been through that. And, you know, if they can know that you've come through something similar, and you don't have to give details, but you know.
Oh no, yeah, me personally.
Just to give them some context. Care.
Yeah, my life is an open book because there's always going to be somebody there. That's kind of what I've learned on my journey is part of losing touch with my feminine side was not allowing myself the space to be vulnerable. And because that is what it is. It is the ability to sit in the beauty of vulnerability and unpeel some of the layers that come with it and just love it and own it and nurture it and pour into it in a different capacity. But I had stopped doing that for myself. And in turn, in hindsight, as I look at it, when I stopped doing it for myself, I stopped doing it for others. And it's there's a trickle effect. So now there's this barrier and I'm no longer soft and gentle. I'm hard. And coarse. And even my voice changed and the way I held my head. You know, when you run into people as I have, I had run into so many people that were comfortable tearing me down mm-hmm. that I forgot I was the shit, because I had people telling me, oh, you think you're the shit. And we were not always in the stage. If you think back, we were not always in the stage of empowerment where it was okay for a woman to be strong and gentle, mm-hmm. Vulnerable and mentally at peace. We didn't mm-hmm. always operate in this. We just really, over the last couple of years, started embodying the beauty of actually being a woman. Like, mm-hmm. I think our upbringing gave me the understanding that my role is, I'm supposed to be strong.
And so,
strong. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right? But strength to different people look differently. So strength right. for me, coming from the Bronx, moving to North Carolina, meant that I would walk the streets with this scowl on my face, right?
Right.
And then after I had been in North Carolina for a good 2 to 3 years, when I came back home to New York, I'm walking around smiling and the people are looking at me like, what the fuck is wrong with her?
Right.
I lost the balance.
Right.
And that's all it really comes down
to. What age were you when you moved?
13.
Okay, so here's what's interesting. Give me a second to put my coach hat on for a minute, okay? Okay. If you're okay with that, right?
Yeah.
Okay, because there's a couple of things here that I just want to dissect that I think are really interesting and really important to point out on how energy can even transform you physically, right? Mm-hmm. Not just mentally and spiritually. So, you know, Nakia is breaking that she's grows up in the Bronx up until about 13, right? Where, you know, essentially in the environment you were in, you feel from your perspective, you know, what your mom came up in, she was pouring into you to protect you, right? So it's mm-hmm. basically like, and you know, Nakia's mother is one of my favorite, like I love all my cousins. She's an extraordinary person and has such a huge heart, but I swear to God, she will knock your ass into the next stratosphere. The words,
just with her words.
With her words alone, you will be decimated into dust, right?
Yeah.
Like she plays no games. And, you know, you can see beneath though, she may kill me for saying this, there is such a warmth and such a love and such a mm-hmm. fierce love for her family, you know, her devotion. You know, when my dad died, her willingness to just jump in the truck and be like, we're there tomorrow.
Puerto Ricans in a truck.
Puerto Ricans in a truck and they come and you know what I mean? And how much, you know, she was just willing to do everything to support. And you can feel and understand that, you know, her growth in where she was, she had to come up that way. Like that was her way of protecting herself. This is what she passes on to her daughter. This is what you learn naturally because it's mm-hmm. all she knows. It makes mm-hmm. sense, right? Mm-hmm. Now we move you from the Bronx to North Carolina, right? Now, was the atmosphere different? Is this a different neighborhood, a different kind of vibe? But yet you're still coming with the hard ass attitude of the Bronx, but it wasn't needed in North Carolina? Like, what was that?
Listen, in hindsight, let's be very clear. A lot of that shit wasn't needed. Mm-hmm. When I became a mother, I learned to understand that the resources that were available to my mother were not the same mm-hmm. as they are for me. So my parenting skills are differently. When we moved from the Bronx to North Carolina, there was all types of shock, right? So we lived in a melting pot. When you look at our family, we are the Rainbow Coalition. Mm-hmm. I didn't understand mm-hmm. how things worked once you got past the Mason-Dixon line. You know what I'm mm-hmm. saying? And so mm-hmm. when I got here, there were some very obvious differences. I was this brown-skinned girl with long hair. And I was loud. I projected my voice and mm-hmm. I was the energy when I walked in the room, even when I didn't mm-hmm. want to have the attention on me. It was an adjustment in so many, it was culture shock for real. Mm-hmm. Like in mm-hmm. North Carolina, Hispanics are Mexican. There's not a differentiation.
Mm-hmm. Right. They're like, and everybody likes spicy food. Why don't you like spicy food? I'm like, what?
It's Taco Tuesday. Like, that's what they're living for. But
right.
I'm looking at them like, hey, but you know, I want some penne and arroz con pollo. What's
right.
Like,
wait, but let me ask you though. So you're in North Carolina. So the energy there is, you know, I get it. You're saying that it was never needed, but you are there. So you have to put on a certain suit of armor, you think, right? Mm-hmm. But what I wanted to circle back to, because I thought this was so interesting too, was the fact that how you explain it changed you physically, like your voice changed, you know, how you hold yourself changes, how you walk changes, right? And, you know, it was very similar too, is like anytime you're in protective mode, when the students come to my class, I wanted to point this out because that's what I'm dealing with a lot, is I'm trying to get them to just be comfortable in their body, even just standing. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times I have students, they'll come and their shoulders are rounded over, their breasts are trying to disappear into their body. You know, they are literally muting their body, or everything is being held so tightly mm-hmm. that the idea of opening the hips is like, they seem like they're locked. Right. So, and energy can influence not just a masculine energy or the need to protect or be aggressive in the divine masculine, you know, the immature masculine. It's not that. It's about just in general how energy can shift the body, I think is really absolutely fascinating, you know. So I want to know, I'm gonna move you along here, because I want to know, you're walking around, you know, would you say that some heartbreaks are the things that caused you to shut down?
Not just from a male-female perspective mm-hmm. either. Like there's, if we're being honest about it, women are vicious. Mm. They're vicious, mm. right? Mm-hmm. And so again, I have to go back to, we were not always in this empowerment stage. We didn't always mm-hmm. operate in that space. What I found in a lot of the spaces that I've walked into was there were more crab in a barrel mentalities than go get it, girl. You know what I'm saying? So when you
whoa, wait a minute. This is big. Hold on. So you're telling me that yes, there might have been some, you know, the heartbreak that can come between, you know, your male-female relationship or whatever, any a partnership or any relationship, romantic, let's just say, right? Romantic relationship, period, regardless of the genders.
Right.
That's not it. What I'm hearing you say that there was the heartbreaks that came that really pushed you towards that energy of defense came from the heartbreaks other women gave you.
Yes.
In their behavior towards you.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah. That's some wounded, that's some like that. Wounded sister shit right there.
That's yeah. like that. You know what I'm saying? And I think that there are probably a lot of us mm-hmm. that operate or have operated in that space. It's really what makes you start paying attention to the circles that you're in.
Well, for sure. I mean, I know that firsthand. Like that, my part of what I know fuels my work with women is my own healing I need to do with women because of yep. the women that have betrayed me that I thought I walked around thinking I can't be friends with women. Too many of them, because it's just fucking trouble every time I hear. Right. There's jealousy, there's gonna be competition. Mm-hmm. They start tripping about what they're wearing. Ain't nobody can be secure in themselves. You can't share your good news because this woman's gonna start tripping. Like it was just that too was much. My mentality, but it yeah. was, and it wasn't necessarily the truth. It's just what had happened a few times, right? So this is the other right. thing is that we operate in assumption because it's happened a few times when we start to think that every single female woman that we're going to come encounter with is going to be problematic, right?
Yeah.
Right. So then we kind of create problems before there even are problems, if there even are problems.
Unmet, undisclosed expectations.
Yes, you taught me. Tell them what that means.
Unmet, undisclosed expectations. It is walking into any situation with your own perception of the way the situation should go and not giving the other person the courtesy of being aware of what your expectation is. I personally feel like it also goes hand in hand with boundaries. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Because I can't, how old were we before? I was in my 30s before I was even able to express to you personally what you meant to me as far as how I looked at you. And I can remember even in that conversation, we both had wow moments because here, you know, even at the beginning of this conversation, you're explaining to me who I am to you. And I don't see you. I don't see me with those eyes, but I can't see me with those eyes because they're yours. It's your journey the same way it's my journey. So if I put the pressure on you, Brimana, that you're always going to be up here. I'm always going to put you on a pedestal. It doesn't matter what you do. When you are not feeling your best and I don't reciprocate the energy the way you're used to seeing it, we now have an unmet expectation.
Right.
I never disclosed it to you in the first place. So how can I expect for you to live up to that expectation if I've never even had a conversation with you?
Right.
You taught me the importance of accountability in every aspect of my life. But there were people prior to us even having that pivotal moment in our relationship that for me, I was their strength and didn't know it. For me, they looked up to me for whatever reason. Yeah. All right, here's the girl from the Bronx that moved to the suburbs, My mom didn't work for quite a while, but nobody knew the things that were going on behind the scenes, but they had this expectation. So I'm supposed to be able to dance. I can speak Spanish fluently. This, that, and the third, blah, 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 yada, yada, yada. Imagine how many times I disappointed people. And that's what I carried. So now here at 13, I'm picking up this bag. Then I get to 15, 16. So traditionally we would have had a quinceañera or sweet 16. I didn't have that. I did have a sweet 16. It was a party in the garage. It was nowhere as lit as a particular sweet 16 that I remember.
Listen now, come on now.
But it was perfect for that space and that time. Again, I'd never expressed to my mother what my expectation for a sweet 16 was.
Right.
Unmet, undisclosed expectation. But here we are in the garage and we're having the time of our life.
Right.
Transition to 20. I become a mother. My maternal figures in my life look different than most of the people that I was accustomed to being around. When I got here, I came into contact with more people who came from two family, you know what I'm saying, two parent households. We were raised by some of the strongest, baddest single women.
Yeah, a lot of women
in existence. Our men are incredible. Don't get me wrong. The men in our family, like. They're the candle that has to be held, you know, that we have to hold people against. How can they ever compete with the men in our life? But those men came just like us from strong single women. Again, unmet, undisclosed expectations. So now I'm in a space where I'm having to raise a little girl. I don't want her to be as hard. I don't want her to be too soft. And the world that I brought this child into is nothing like the world that I
grew. So how are you going to do that? How are you going to balance it? Because I know there's a lot of mothers that listen to this and have, you know, have had these questions, have asked me, you know, I want my daughter to be comfortable in her body. I want her to feel, you know, comfortable in her sensuality. I want her to embrace who she is. And the world we live in is just such a hot mess that I don't want that energy also being shown out there. And, you know, so there's this conflict. I mean, I know my opinion and my feeling about that, but I'd love to hear how do you balance that? How do you empower a young woman to be who she needs to be in the world in her full expression and also protect her?
You see my face?
They can't yet. This will be on Spotify when they watch it.
Right.
She's giving her famous deadpan. What does that mean?
In hindsight, mm-hmm. You got to give people space to fuck up.
Mm-hmm.
My mm-hmm. best parenting advice is give people the space to fuck up.
Mm-hmm.
Because we didn't come with my baby. I don't know about anybody else's, but my baby did not come with an instruction manual. I mm-hmm. read every parenting book under the sun. And in my mind, I knew all the things that I wasn't going to be and how I was going to love it, nurture it, cuddle it, you know, oh, damn, mm-hmm. they got to get fed. Right. But then there's the age of two when they actually develop their personality.
Right.
And you instinctively want to protect it and overcorrect some of the things that you already see, not even understanding that that baby is a gift that we've been given.
Mm-hmm.
And our purpose is strictly to guide it. That's it. Strictly to guide it, not to dictate to it who it's going to become, not to dictate, guide it. So at two, when her personality started, actually her personality had developed far beyond two. She was who she was going to be unapologetically mm-hmm. from the day she took her first breath.
Mm-hmm.
I am going to be beautiful. The world is going to revolve around me and you will bend at my beck and call. That's it. That's what I knew. That's what I saw. And that's what I nurtured. And then while I was busy nurturing that, she was watching me grow, but she was also watching me fall. So mm-hmm. she took such good notes that she became a generational curse breaker. So now mm-hmm. she doesn't have to be a single mother. She's in a mm-hmm. long-term relationship. She mm-hmm. was able to identify by the time she was 8 or 9 what she was and was not putting up with in a man mm-hmm. because of what she watched me put up with. But not just a man, Jaja. She knew what she was and wasn't going to put up with from people. She mm-hmm. has a very clear line as far as her boundaries go. And if she don't fuck with you, she don't fuck with you, period. If it doesn't make her feel warm and fuzzy,
mm-hmm.
it took me a second to get the hang of that, right? But as she became a teenager, when I stopped trying to cage her,
mm-hmm.
is when she flourished.
Mm-hmm.
That's when she became the most, it was the most beautiful journey that I can, oh, here's a trigger. It was that thing that my mother didn't allow for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And so because she did not allow me to have that freedom, it was uncomfortable for me to operate in that space of allowing her to have her freedom. But she was not mm-hmm. conforming to anything that I, and it wasn't rebellion. It was just, I am a butterfly.
Mm-hmm.
Let me be my fucking butterfly self.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to be stuck in whatever it is that you want to be stuck in, then be it. But I'm a butterfly and we do butterfly shit over here. We fly, we flitter around, we do what we gonna do. And before I knew it, she was teaching me how to be a butterfly.
Right. You see what I'm saying? Right, yes.
So in a very roundabout way, that goes back to answer the question probably 20 minutes ago in how, you know, what was the catalyst? But my baby girl was the catalyst to walking into my femininity again. It was like, mm-hmm. oh, hold on, I don't have to be hard because I need her to be delicate. Because I was content. I'll play with the boys. You know what I'm saying? I'm still a football head. I still love sports ridiculously. Mm-hmm. Ridiculously, but mm-hmm. I also like to be gentle. My daughter mm-hmm. told me that. My daughter showed me that. My daughter showed me the importance of a hug.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't grow up
mm-hmm.
getting hugged on. Right. I didn't grow up getting loved on in a very transparent moment. My mom nicknamed me ugly.
I didn't know that.
Hey, ugly. Shocking.
Really?
Yes. Hey, ugly. And I answered to it.
Damn. You were nothing. Right? I mean, God damn, boo.
Yes. And even when we lived in New York, I told you, I knew I had a big head. I had this body. I finally grew into my head, kind of, sort of. But like the people would look at me and be, oh, her body is beautiful, but her face. And then I had this gap. Girl, I got this Monifa gap.
This is like- so crazy to me because hold on. There's so much, and I gotta dissect. We gotta go back for a second.
Okay.
But I need to address this. Listen, the experience happened, right? We can't go back and change anything. What anybody thinks ultimately is what you've learned doesn't matter. And I'm shocked because literally all my mother and I would say was how gorgeous of a little girl you were.
Thank you.
We thought you were the most beautiful from your, first of all, y'all, when you do catch the video, because this woman's skin is fucking flawless. Okay. She is truly the color of the richest milk chocolate.
Thank you.
Flawless. God damn. I ain't talking no Swiss chocolate neither. You know, and her smile is stunning with her gap, which I always thought was so unique. And these big, black, gorgeous pearl of eyes that just, when they roll, they were cutting you down.
They pierce through you.
They pierce through you, but they also were just so beautiful and sparkly. So I'm hearing this. And I even think your Titi would be shocked. And I know she's hearing us somewhere. So she knows she's going to come talk to you later about it.
You know it, right?
She's going to be all in your ear. Because they don't come visit me, but they be in the kids' kitchen all the time talking
all
shit.
All the time,
but
banging those pots.
She's going to come bang a pot upside your fucking head. Because, you know, even though it wasn't you who came up with that thought, it was just never, I mean, I'm shocked. Like, literally just thought you were the most gorgeous child.
Oh, thank you.
And I still think, and I actually, and the funny thing is like three times in this show, I'm stopping. I wanted to be like, I just want to interrupt her and be like, Brimana, you fucking fine. Like, you look so fly right now. Like, your skin's glowing, your hair. But I let you keep talking because I don't want you to lose your train of thought. Yeah, so it's wow. Well, I appreciate your transparency, my love, because I know those things are not easy to bring, but I know that people out there, someone's going to be able to relate and understand, you know,
and that's
know
my that desire.
Not the only one. Yeah.
That's my desire. Like my purpose, it took a while for me to stop running from my purpose. Like, you don't become a shape shifter without having to go through some shit. You know what I'm saying? And you don't decide that you are going to blaze the path before you have experienced being burned a couple of times. So what I found was my throat chakra became closed because I wasn't sharing the painful side. Everybody, my dad asked me in 2013, if God asked you, or if God told you everything that you had to go through to get to the blessing, would you take the assignment? And I said, hell no.
Hell, not the answer no. I thought.
Hell no. I wouldn't put this stuff on anybody, right? It's part of the reason why I never liked the word resilient, because you don't choose. Well, in my mind at one point in time, I didn't choose to bounce back from shit, right? Yeah. I didn't choose in my mind at the time to go through some shit.
You just had to. Shit.
Yeah. It's just what you, I've been in survival mode.
This is so interesting because what Sarah Marie, a friend of mine and I were talking about the other day was, what is the catalyst that pushes somebody through and helps them overcome these things, right? The big boundaries, the huge hurdles, right? So for instance, like, if you have someone who, you know, has to lose weight and get healthy because they're going to die in 6 months, if they don't, like, it's definitive. versus someone who doesn't have that kind of deadline on death. The person who has a deadline on death kind of doesn't even think about it. They may just go straight into, this is what I have to do, and they just do mm-hmm. it. Mm-hmm. But because there's this energy and there's a catalyst and there's an urgency to survive there. And she's like, you can't teach that. It's just what happens in the experience of the moment, mm-hmm. right? But how come, because her feeling was that some people, because I was like, how come some people don't though? Because there's people who are in tough circumstances. There's some people who have been through things that were as hard as that you may have come up in, and they don't seem to fight, or they don't seem to be able to choose differently. How come?
So for me,
I have some people believe they can change it and some people believe they can't.
You got to come to the end of your own strength.
You got to hit rock bottom.
You got to. And some people, even their rock bottom, your rock bottom isn't going to look the same as my rock bottom. You know what I'm saying? So for me, when I look at, we'll take the same situation. The person that has to lose weight for their health. They're at the end of their own strength. What they've been doing has not been working. There's mm-hmm. already been a trial and error kind of thing going on for them. Whereas the person that just wants to lose weight, if they have not come to the place where they understand the importance of why, mm-hmm. that it's not going to be a life or death situation for them. It's no different from, and I'm speaking as someone who has been in domestic violence situations, mm-hmm. right? It's no different from those of us that got out mm-hmm. and those of us that chose to stay. And please believe that those of us that got out were once upon a time the ones that chose to stay for mm-hmm. whatever reason it was. There is this thing in each of us, whether we choose to nurture it or not, that says, eventually, I want better for myself. Mm-hmm. This is not where I am going to stay. This is not where my journey is going to end. And so what I found on my particular journey is there are people that I come in contact with that they walk into darkness and they're content in that darkness and they'll stay in that darkness, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's some people that walk into that darkness and they're like, ah, bitch, I don't like this table. I don't like the food they serving here. I don't like none of it. Oh, hold on. I got a rock and a stick. I'm about to light a flame. I'll be warm. I'm gonna get some insight. I'm gonna treat this valley as the protective space instead of the place that's gonna break me. Oh, and bitch, by the way, I see the light at the end of the tunnel. Let me go mm-hmm. walk in that direction. I'm gonna pick up my mat and go. Mm-hmm. You can't teach that. Mm-hmm. That is an innate desire.
Yeah, period. I mean, I was speaking to somebody else who's very close to me who advises me too on the spiritual level, and their feeling was some people just aren't ever gonna choose.
No, because they don't know that they have a choice. Mm-hmm.
Or they don't believe.
And your unbelief will keep you in some fucked up situations.
Yeah.
It will. Your unbelief, when I was walking around thinking I'm ugly, guess what I was doing? Some pretty mm-hmm. ugly shit. Mm-hmm. Okay? It meant mm-hmm. that I was using people. Mm-hmm. For whatever the reason, if I'm using them to satisfy some insecurity in me, whatever it was, I was using people. I wasn't valuing the time. I didn't have value for myself because, again, I'm ugly.
Right.
If you're ugly inside, remember that from Color Purple? If you're ugly inside, you're ugly outside.
Yep.
I become ugly inside mm-hmm. and bled onto the people around me as a result of that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I didn't know any better. It's what,
right?
It's the environment that I chose to cultivate. But right. when I started shifting my perspective and started coming into contact with people whose faith was incredible, mm-hmm. and started thinking, oh, well, I want to be there. I want to experience that. Coming into contact with women that were movers and shakers. Hold on, wait a minute. I want to, because those conversations are different.
Right.
When you have conversations with people that are stuck in darkness, it is the same problem over and over and over again. No solution. When you have conversations with movers and shakers, they the only reason they're talking about the problem is because they're trying to find the resolution. Oh.
Sorry,
I know your
sound thing is being weird.
Oh, okay. So for me, that's what changes it. And it's also what I speak to when I speak to other women, and women in particular. I don't mind knowing that dark space that you're in. I'm that bitch that's gonna come. I'm gonna bring the mat. I'm gonna sit in it with you for a second. But bitch, we can't stay here. Mm-hmm. We gotta go. We got some stuff mm-hmm. to, like, let's go ahead, unpack it, do what we need to do, but we're gonna miss the train.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right.
It's 12:05. Why are we still here? Like, we've already been through that. And I don't operate in that sense because it's not important. That experience, that whatever, is not important. I operate in that sense because the person that you become as a result of that adversity is so much more important,
right,
than that person that chooses to sit in darkness. And it took a long time. Once I got out of the darkness, and don't get me wrong, I'm not going to sit and pretend that I don't entertain darkness every now and then, because hell, one point in time, mm-hmm. I was cooking darkness dinner, inviting it over to the house. Come play with the kids. You want to watch the kids? But once
you silly.
Once you get out of it, like, I don't want to go back to it.
Right.
And that is not, it's not anything but having lingered too long in the mm-hmm. same space and realizing that there is so much beauty in letting go. There's so much beauty in those valley right. moments. You want to loosen somebody, open up somebody's throat chakra? Man, tell a woman to put a post-it note of a memo to somebody that they admire on the refrigerator mm-hmm. and on their bathroom mirror. Mm-hmm. And then run back into them in a couple of weeks, because it's written down now. Mm-hmm. So now that it's written down and they're seeing it on a regular basis, it stops being the person that they admire the most, and they start internalizing it. Mm. So now, hello gorgeous isn't meant for the person that you admire most. Hello gorgeous is meant for you, and you ought to be the fucking person that you admire the most.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Period. My throat chakra yes. wasn't always open.
Mm-hmm.
I was closed up, hunched over. My back was aching. My bra too tight. My boobs shaking from the left to the right.
Wait. Come here, you crazy. Yeah. All right. I told you, I gotta land the plane. I'm gonna land the plane. So here, the last thing I wanted to touch on, though, and it's because we could be here for hours, y'all, you can see, because, you know, we could do this all day. When you were speaking to breaking, you know, your daughter breaking generational curses, and you also doing the same, mm-hmm. You know, and making decisions that you knew how you wanted to raise you, knew you wanted to do certain things, and just seeing how you were. You know, you weren't going to crush her light is what kept coming up for me. Because, you know, I speak a lot to the light, and my uh-huh. videos a lot speak to people dimming uh-huh. their light and the things that uh-huh. cause lights to dim. And oftentimes, you know, not oftentimes, I would just say there are going to be times when the light will dim, especially in young people, but in young women in particular, because of the relationship with their mother uh-huh. Or, you know, the what people are viewing, especially in that crucial time period of 13 to 14 to 15 to 16 years old, really what they're viewing is this young person coming into their own, and it can be scary. And I know, and I think it's because people, you know, as a parent, you see how beautiful and bright that light is, mm-hmm. right? So you think you're doing your child a service by dimming this light or causing them to put the light out
when in fact, you know, that's really, it's not at all. I think for me, you know, my opinion, when I said I had my own opinion about it, was that our job is not to protect the light. I mean, yes, obviously you're going to protect the light, right? You're going to protect mm-hmm. your child, mm-hmm. but not in the sense of trying to, by stuffing your child in a closet or by trying to block everything that makes them who they are. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to protect them by teaching about the people in the world around them, about making them aware of how others may view them, about letting them know that, you know, being so in tune with their body that they listen to their intuition and know when that light can go bright and when the light can go low, because these people aren't the people to be bringing your light around.
Yes.
But not because your light doesn't deserve to be seen, or that your light is shameful, or that your light is boastful or wrong, which is where I think we fuck up, because yes. that's the message ultimately, is that we're teaching them that there's something wrong with you, not that there's something wrong with the rest of the world.
Right.
You know what I mean? Okay. So this is your closing question.
That's it.
You ready?
That's it.
This is a very special dinner. And I know you are a cook, you are a chef. This is when it comes in your blood and your heart. You know, you work with your juices, you know, you got a special dinner. You're going to bring your best game to this dinner. Who are the three people you are inviting to this dinner? They can be anybody you want.
Aditya Wilda.
Okay.
Stevie Wonder.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Why Stevie? She just gave me the bitch. Why Stevie? Why not?
Because
I'm eating on camera.
Do what you do. Stevie, because the man is blind.
Okay.
But he writes and sings as though his eyes have seen some mm-hmm. of the most beautiful things in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that lets me know that everything around him, you know, all the other senses are in tune,
right,
with the universe and the mm-hmm. thing, and that's the only thing that I aspire mm-hmm. to be. I aspire to be so in tune with the universe that if I ever lost my sight, my words would still give you the ability mm-hmm. to see it, feel it, smell it, and experience it for the wholeness and the fullness that life has to offer you.
Beautiful. I love it.
And then Betty White.
Third person.
Betty White. And yeah. I think that's just the timing of it. Betty White.
I know.
I want to be at almost a century old. I want to be able to find so much love and laughter still. Mm-hmm. Because you imagine 100 years, you've seen some terrible shit.
Yes. Yes.
You've watched some of the most inhumane behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
And you still can muster up the strength to laugh and make other people laugh about. Like, I'm on the other side of 40. So I don't want anything in my life that does not make me and the people around me feel good. And if we right. have to experience that fucked up shit because life happens, then I want us to be able to experience that in a way that we still are full, because right. we have each other, we have our circle, we have whatever, mm-hmm. because that's the legacy that I want to leave for the next mm-hmm. generation. Mm-hmm. Like, life's not supposed to be fair. Some mm-hmm. people, you know what I'm saying? Some people make it through mm-hmm. life and they don't have those hardships, whatever. But if my hardships help you make it to the next space in a better mindset, with a better love and appreciation for yourself and everything around you, then I've done my job.
Mm.
Oh, and then my Titi, because she was a fierce, badass bitch that
yeah, cooked yes.
her ass off in the motherfucking
yes.
kitchen. So
yes.
everything that Stevie's eyes can't see, his taste buds would definitely be able to experience. His nose would, and if he ever took the time to dance with her, his body would move in ways that he would not even be able to imagine.
God, I love you so much.
Because that is what, in my house.
I love it. All right. So you have any last parting words of advice or anything you want to share with the people listening and around the things that we discussed, their femininity, their divine feminine energy, any of those things?
Everything that you need to exist in this world, you have inside of you. Mm-hmm. You can't have joy without pain. You can't have love without laughter. The bees help the flowers. Everything right. that you need is inside of you. And don't let anybody make you feel anything less. So that mm-hmm. even on your worst day, on my worst day, I'm still the shit.
Right.
In my sweatpants, I'm still the shit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If I'm pouring love out everywhere, that's the most important. Just because it doesn't look like it's not growing doesn't mean that it's not growing.
I love that one. That's great. Yes. I love it. I love it. Primana, this has been a joy. I'm going to have you back at some point because I feel like we didn't even get into half the other things I talked about. Oh,
I'm like, wait, did we even hit the subjects that I touched it right? You know me.
We were all over, but it was perfect. It was perfect. I love you so very much. Thank you. Thank you so much for spending the afternoon with us. And I will talk to you very soon, my love.
I love you so much. I love your people and, you know, continue to be kick-ass.
That's what I'm talking about.
Love and light to you, cuz.
Love and light. Thank you for listening to the Electric Feminine Podcast with me, your host, Anjua Maximo. If you're ready to dive into this work of developing your connection to your goddess energy, of removing those obstacles standing in your way, please reach out at info@anjuamaximo.com, or you can check out my courses available and my private coaching at www.anjuamaximo.com. Be good to you, be good to each other.